You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
President Trump declares a state of emergency over the threat from foreign adversaries and the companies they control. And yes, Huawei, he's looking at you. Dutch intelligence is said to be investigating the possibility of backdoors in telecommunications networks. Concerns about spyware proliferation rise. Cipher stunting is observed in the wild. Titan security keys are spoofable. Mekonning Airlines. And misconfigurations expose PII in Russia. From the CyberWire studios at Datatribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, May 16, 2019. U.S. President Trump yesterday issued an executive order declaring a national emergency with respect to the threat foreign adversaries pose to U.S. technology infrastructure. Authority to issue the order comes from the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. The executive order opens the way to banning the use of products and services produced by companies effectively under the control of such adversaries. The Secretary of Commerce will take the lead in determining where such threats to national security lie and will do so in consultation with other agencies as appropriate. The Secretary of Commerce is charged with developing rules or regulations to implement the order within 150 days. Commerce has already said it will add Huawei and 70 of its affiliates to an entity list of organizations to be banned under the executive order. Huawei knows that it's the company of interest here. American authorities haven't been at all coy over the past year. And Huawei has responded with a mixture of honey and vinegar. It's innocent, The Guardian reports the company saying, and it will sign agreements to convince skeptical governments that its products represent no threat. Besides, none of you can really afford to do without us. That's the vinegar. The offer to sign undertakings not to engage in espionage on behalf of the Chinese government has been in play for some weeks, and Huawei has negotiated confidence-building inspection and disclosure agreements with other governments. These haven't always proceeded entirely happily. In the U.S., for example, the Huawei Cybersecurity Evaluation Center in Banbury, the HCSEC, was established to inspect Huawei kit inbound to Britain. GCHQ, which monitors the British end of things, said earlier this year that Huawei had been unreliable and slipshod in addressing security issues raised by the HCSEC, and that, moreover, the company's security was simply sloppy from an engineering point of view. Those who bet on form will note T-Mobile's experience with Huawei's willingness to adhere to agreements that would protect IP. That experience was not a good one. As we learned 2 weeks ago at the Global Cyber Innovation Summit, Huawei not only continued to steal IP after signing agreements not to do so, but the company even incentivized employees to snoop on partners' trade secrets. Huawei's case also isn't helped by reports that the Netherlands General Intelligence and Security Service is investigating what it believes may be an espionage backdoor the company insinuated into Dutch commercial telecommunications networks. The intelligence agency isn't speaking publicly, but the Dutch news outlet Volkskrant says it has sources close to the inquiry who've confirmed that an investigation is ongoing. The General Intelligence and Security Service has expressed skepticism of Huawei in the past. Why are Chinese firms targets? There are three other big adversaries the U.S. has: Russia, Iran, and North Korea. But China is a major trading partner, and China makes things people actually want to buy. Russia and Iran don't offer much apart from oil, the value of which increasing U.S. production has undercut. And North Korea, of course, offers nothing much at all. The Telegraph reports that NSO Group's ownership says it will investigate how Pegasus became the payload in a WhatsApp exploit and promises transparency and more due diligence with respect to its customers. Novel Pina Capital, the British private equity fund that has a significant stake in NSO Group, says it's determined to ensure that NSO products like Pegasus aren't abused. DNS, the domain name system, is one of the foundational underpinnings of the Internet, translating domain names to IP addresses so users can reach online resources thereafter. But DNS isn't immune to attack, and lately it's been in the crosshairs of a number of bad actors. Chris Beavers is CEO at NS1, a provider of managed and private DNS services.
The biggest threats are hijacking and poisoning attacks that are about taking over your domain, or DDoS attacks that are about disabling your domain and keeping your application offline. Few essential best practices that have emerged around DDoS in particular. First of all, don't power your own internet-facing DNS, right? It now requires, if you want to be defended against these large-scale DDoS attacks, a huge investment in network infrastructure, DDoS mitigation capability, and so on. And there are companies in the managed DNS space in particular that are making gigantic investments in their network infrastructure and mitigation technologies and DNS software to defend against the scale and complexity of attacks that we're seeing today. So work with them because they are making these investments on your behalf. Another important thing around DDoS is redundancy. 4 or 5 years ago, what we saw is most domains on the internet were what we would call singly homed. They lived on a single vendor's set of DNS name servers. The problem with that is if the vendor comes under a major attack or has some other kind of network issue, it takes your domain offline. And the best practice that emerged was work with multiple vendors or multiple DNS networks at any one time to service your domain in an active-active fashion so that if one of them comes under some big attack, the other one picks up the slack. The DNS protocol is designed for this purpose or to work seamlessly in this way. And the technology to do this has improved pretty dramatically in the past couple of years since the big well-known attacks that have happened. There are vendors in the market today that can deploy multiple physically independent networks for you to introduce redundancy and protect against DDoS attack. Another basic best practice that has emerged is sign your domains. Use DNSSEC. DNSSEC is an extension of the protocol, as we spoke about, that's been around for more than a decade now. But much like IPv6, it's taken a long time for it to gain adoption. The incentivization hasn't always been there. And in particular, it's been hard to implement in the past. Now, we're seeing these active threats like those identified by the Talos Group at Cisco or by FireEye and CISA at Department of Homeland Security so far in 2019. These threats are real. They're happening. That should provide some incentivization to protect your domains. It's a brand motivation, right? If your domain is hijacked and your customer's data is stolen, these days it's on you because the technology is there to protect your domain. And in particular, you will find multiple vendors in the managed DNS ecosystem today that make DNSSEC as easy as pushing a button. So go push the button. It's really important now. And then the final sort of area that I encourage everyone I'm speaking with to go audit and investigate is access controls and management of their domains. This is how some of these hijacking attacks are really happening today. It's weak passwords, it's lack of two-factor authentication on access to DNS management systems or registrars. And the other really important piece of this is, you know, not just access controls, but monitoring changes that are happening in your domains. Is somebody changing really important DNS records like your mail server records or the NS records that point your domain at particular name servers or the signing keys if you've implemented DNSSEC? And modern managed DNS vendors in particular provide APIs or integrations with your SIM so that you can get updates instantly when changes are happening to those important DNS records in your domain and drive alerts off of those in your SOC or with your security team. So those are the three basic things: redundancy for DDoS, sign your domains with DNSSEC, and best practice control plane security and monitoring.
That's Chris Beavers from NS1. Researchers at security firm Proofpoint have released a study of TA-542, which they call a prolific threat actor. TA-542's signature project is Emotet, which has gone through four versions. Emotet emerged in May 2014 as a banking Trojan. Since then, it's evolved. Now, in 2019, Emotet has become a system for delivering other malicious payloads. How is it distributed? It will surprise no one to hear that it spreads by social engineering. Akamai has observed an increase in cipher stunting, a method by which attackers finagle their encryption traffic in order to avoid detection. The security firm says it's seen that attackers, quote, on a scale never seen before, end quote, are using automatically varied permutations of the initial handshake request, the client hello packet, in order to obscure their trail, making it appear that the requests are coming from a large number of distinct systems. This tends to defeat attempts to fingerprint such communications, and fingerprinting has been a useful way of recognizing malicious traffic. Researchers at Northeastern University point out the possibility that hostile actors could use bogus signals to divert commercial aircraft. Such deception is an old possibility. It's traditionally called meconning, and it goes back to the earliest days of radio-aided aerial navigation. But the increased dependence of aircraft on such navigational systems does seem to raise the stakes. Google has warned that its Titan Bluetooth security keys, widely used for two-factor authentication, can be hijacked by attackers within Wi-Fi range. Mountain View is offering replacement hardware, said to be proof against this particular hack. A joint EU-US investigation has resulted in the indictment of 11 hackers in connection with the use of the Gosnim banking Trojan. The gang was widely distributed, but Eastern European, five in Russia, two in Ukraine, two in Georgia, and one each in Bulgaria and Moldova. Their U.S. indictment was filed in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Pennsylvania. Five are in custody, and two of them will face trial in Georgia. Six are on the run. Call it Rusconfiguratsiya. Why not? It's misconfigure in Russian, and that's what seems to have happened to some official Russian databases recently. The Russian NGO Informational Culture says it's discovered the personal data of some 2.25 million Russian citizens knocking around on the Internet. The people affected range from the ordinary Ivans and Ivankas up to some pretty high-level bigwigs, and their stuff is out there where any Joe Lunchbucket or Janie Sixpack can scoop it up. Roskomnadzor, the government's information watchdog, is doing a little whistling in the dark, saying that, well, all that info was never meant to be private in the first place. And maybe they're right. But there's really nothing to be ashamed of. The researchers blame inconsistency with respect to document management, poorly skilled IT personnel, and failure to implement data loss prevention for the exposures. And that could happen to anyone. It's happened to a lot of people. Just ask the U.S. government, which could show you a pretty cage full of similar issues at the Office of Personnel Management back in the day.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Emily Wilson. She is the VP of Research at Terbium Labs. Emily, great to have you back. We had this story come by recently from the folks over at Cisco's Talos unit about work they had done exposing groups on Facebook that were doing shady stuff out in the open. When I saw this story, I thought, well, I have to talk to Emily about this because in my mind, these are the sorts of things that I would expect to be happening on the dark web, but I was surprised to see them out there in the open like this. What's your take?
When I first started doing dark web work, I was stunned to see how blatantly and how openly some of these criminal markets and some of these criminal groups operate. You know, we have people who are leaking stolen data via Twitter. We have people who are operating crime groups on Facebook. You know, even these carding markets we've talked about before, these specialized markets where people are selling stolen payment cards, I've seen these operating on .coms and .orgs. I think hiding in plain sight is generous. These people are operating very blatantly, which speaks to the lack of consequences in many cases.
Hmm. Yeah, one of the points that they made in their research here was that in particular, these Facebook groups were going after the less sophisticated users. They were selling tools that were easy to use.
Fraudsters are in business to make money. Cyber criminals are in business, ultimately, one way or another, to make money. And so you have to ask yourself, where can I pick up market share? Where can I go and find new customers for my business? Where are my customers living and working and breathing? If we take away all of the nuance and the spookiness that we tend to hear around some of these criminal groups and remember that they are people just like us, they are us, operating businesses with the intention of getting as much profit as they can while they can, then this makes sense. You're going to go where the people are. You're going to get all of the younger people on Facebook who are looking to make money and turn a profit quickly and maybe don't care too much if it's unscrupulous.
You know, one of the fascinating things I saw in their research here was that the way that the algorithms work on Facebook in terms of recommending things, you could imagine a teenager going to look for cheats on Fortnite, and the algorithm gets spun up and says, hey, we see you're interested in cheats on Fortnite. How do you feel about stolen credit cards?
It's exactly like that. That's a hypothetical, but I think that's a very representative hypothetical. Like that's the ease of access we're talking about here. You know, there's certainly a variety of broader conversations we could be having about the issues with algorithms, but the use of social media as a marketing tactic for criminal groups or extremist groups, we've seen this play out time and again. You know, it's worked for neo-Nazis and white supremacists. It's worked for ISIS. Of course, it's going to work for cybercrime.
Well, I mean, to their credit, the folks at Facebook were very responsive when Cisco's Talos group reached out to them and shut down many of these sites. But I guess we fall into that mode where it just becomes a game of whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole is definitely what I would call it. Or, you know, I think I've said before, cutting off the head of a Hydra and you have eight more that pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Shutting down these groups is a great first step. it doesn't mean that 8 more groups won't open up, or that these users or these groups that got shut down won't just start over again under new names.
Right.
You know, it's constantly a moving target, and we know that resource allocation is one of the more difficult challenges that these networks face. What do you go after first? And in most cases, cybercrime and certainly fraud are not going to be at the top of the list.
Yeah, I suppose it's a good thing, though. Every little bit of friction that you can add here could be helpful.
Every little bit of friction, and I would say every little bit of publicity. It's a double-edged sword, because you don't want to call attention to people who are then going to say, oh, well, that's what I'll do this summer. I'll just go on Facebook and find some fraud rings or some cybercrime rings, and that's how I'll make my money. I won't get a regular summer job. You know, you don't want to market it or make it look good, but you also want to draw attention to the pervasiveness of the issue and the widespread of the issue and the ease of access of this information, in hopes that other organizations, whether we're talking about law enforcement or government or what have you, are going to say, okay, here's an easy way we can go after some of these groups and shut them down. Here are some things we can tie back into the work that we're already doing to lessen this issue. You want to let people know how bad it is so people can help, and hopefully not recruit too many new criminals in the meantime.
All right. Well, Emily Wilson, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose SixthSense, visit SixthSense.com.